I look forward to reading the annual holiday greetings from a group that Dr. Patrice and I met many years ago. This year, the Evangelical Sisters of Mary in Darmstadt, Germany, wrote, "The Jubilee, 70 years of Israel as a nation, is over." Interesting thing to reflect back on. They continue, "As another year ends and we approach a new one, perhaps we should look, or pardon me, perhaps we look to the future with trepidation, wondering what lies ahead of us. Pleasant surprises, certainly, and perhaps also developments that cause us anxiety worldwide." That served for me as an important reminder that at this time in the Jewish calendar, we are all encouraged to look ahead, even as we look back. So looking back, looking ahead. The Hebrew month of Elul, which we have just concluded now officially, has been a time for reflecting over the past year, and also for anticipation of, and in fact preparation for, new beginnings as we head into this high holiday period, or the fall holiday period. Now, unlike Passover or Hanukkah, the high holidays really don't have a single story with a hero or heroine, and yet there are many stories that are essential to understanding these holidays. So I'm going to share with you briefly three central stories that should help us then focus our attention at this significant time of year, and perhaps to enable us then to more fully experience all that the high holiday period has in store for us. And as I suggested at the outset, that can only occur if we interact with the words that are actually in the page of the text, if we make them our words and our response to God as we have this encounter, this interaction with Him. Some lessons, or pardon me, some stories, therefore, to help through this particular holiday, upcoming holidays to come. Story number one, call it voice lessons. It's the story of the shofar. Now look, at its base, the shofar is the simplest of instruments. Its power lies in its ability to transform our breath into a cry. Now, over the course of the month of Elul that we've just completed, the sound takes on different resonances and nuances. But on its most fundamental level, the shofar reminds us of Isaac's willingness to be sacrificed in the course of Abraham's test of faith. And as I reminded you Friday night, let me remind you yet again that the tradition also, as it reflects, our traditions also, as they reflect on this particular scene, tell us that as Isaac lay bound on that heavenly altar, he saw a heavenly vision, and there was a voice from heaven, and the Spirit of God descended on him. In other parts of our tradition concerning this particular incident, which is called the Akedah, Isaac was told by God that his sacrifice would be an eternally redemptive sacrifice for his people. About 1,000 years ago or so, Maimonides, the Rambam, further describes some of the impact of the shofar. He suggests that its sound, or the sound that emerges from the ram's horn as it is blown, is transformed into a wake-up call, encouraging repentance and alerting us to the realities we face as well as the responsibilities we have. And in the course of the holiday prayers, it becomes a stand-in, literally, for the voice of the community calling out to our God in prayer. Just yesterday, I came across this as I was reading the Jewish Press of Pinellas County. And so let me quote these words from one of our local rabbis. I thought it was well said with respect to the shofar. He said, "Think of all the unbelievable technological achievements which have been made during our lifetimes. We have access to tools and gadgets that our parents and grandparents could not envision in their wildest dreams. And before we even blink, a newer model of the last great invention is released. And what was once cutting edge is now old news and obsolete. Every single facet of our lives has been improved thanks to human ingenuity and creativity. So you would think, with all of our great technological advances, someone, somewhere, could have built a better shofar." Yeah, talk to any of those who blow it, and you'll get a lot of commiseration coming. "A shofar that, when blown, would produce a sweet, harmonious sound, not the squeaky, uneven, even dissonant noise of our current model. I mean, we have basically been using the same shofar for thousands of years. close to 3,000 now as I count them up. Yeah, I know it. Punch that into my computer. Did you see that? Okay, back to what he's saying. We've been basically been using the same shofar for thousands of years, a polished, hollowed-out ram's horn. Everything else around us has undergone multifold upgrades. So why, in this age of wonder and achievement, hasn't anyone created a new and improved shofar? Perhaps maybe Apple can come out with the iShofar. And then he points out, actually, there is an app for that. Don't look it up now. But hidden, he says, within the imperfect sound of the shofar is our answer. This dissonant sound of the shofar reflects our own spiritual imperfections. Its uneven tone compels us to recall the dissonant aspects of our own personalities. At its heart, the shofar calls us to mend the flaws in our character, to jolt us into the awareness of our need for tshuva, repentance. The shofar is not perfect, but we are not perfect. As we enter into this sacred season and prepare to hear the blaring, bleeding sound of the shofar, let's remember our obligation to arouse ourselves from the malaise of the status quo and strive to become something greater. You got the point, and I thought I'd share it with you. Second story, let's call that Happy Birthday. It's the story of creation. According to the Rosh Hashanah Maksor, the world has a birthday. And so because it recalls the creation of the world, as well as the creation of humankind, Rosh Hashanah then provides us with an opportunity to celebrate that beginning. And of course, since Rosh Hashanah is also a Rosh Kodesh, you remember, a new month, the beginning of a new month, since Rosh Hashanah is also a Rosh Kodesh, it anticipates the restoration of creation as well. The Haftorah associated with Rosh Kodesh, or usually associated with it, reinforces this idea of a restoration of creation and of a new beginning. Because the text, the Haftorah text, is Isaiah 66, 22 and 23. And it says, at that time, God will create a new heavens and a new earth. And things will become new. In fact, they'll be restored again to their original intent and purpose at the garden. And so this story inspires us to launch into a fresh beginning for ourselves this coming year. Any birthday is an opportunity to think about what we've accomplished and to make a wish or a plan for the year ahead. The opportunity is there to look over, to look back over the past year, and to look forward to what we can and should accomplish this coming year. Looking back then leads us to the third story. We'll title this story, Hard to Say I'm Sorry. It's the story of forgiveness. Everyone makes mistakes. The real differences lie in making amends and how we make amends. And there are all kinds of things that are written about this at this time of year. And I forgot to pull my copy of one such thing out that I saw last year to share the title with you, but catch me afterwards, and I will. Anyhow, it tells us stuff like when and how we apologize and what we do to repair the damage caused by our actions, that all this can determine the future of our relationships with others and change as well the way in which we think about ourselves. The 10 days of repentance, we call them the Yamim Noraim, the days of awe, provide us with the opportunity then to think about whom we might have and... No, let's change that. To think about whom we have as well as might have hurt. And so to take the initiative to apologize and to reflect on our own behavior. Appropriately then, when we come to the end of the Yamim Noraim, the Yom Kippur liturgy freely acknowledges that we come together at this time of year as a community of people who all have done things we regret. You will recall if you've been here before, or you'd better recall if you've been here before, there are at least two occasions where we list the various possibilities for sins that we have done and that we as a community have been involved in as well. So we practice admitting all that we have done wrong, and we ultimately celebrate the fact that there are so many opportunities for forgiveness in our world, and that we have the assurance that God has forgiven us And the first part of this story, working to repair and restore ruptured relationships, is reinforced by a couple of rabbinic reminders. The first is actually part of our synagogue covenant. It's Matthew chapter 18, where Yeshua, in quoting the rabbis of his day, says something like this. He says, if you have anything against someone within the family, the communal family, go to that person and have the conversation and sort it out and straighten it out. If you have something against someone else. But he covers both sides of this equation. In the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, once again quoting the rabbis, Yeshua says this in Matthew chapter 5, verses 23 and 24. Oh, by the way, let me step back for a second. If we, in fact, do what he suggests we do there in Matthew 18, he reminds us, speaking of the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapter 6, verses 12 and 14, if we forgive others, then God will forgive us also. For as we forgive others, so he forgives us. Now back to the second aspect of that, Matthew 5, 23 and 24. He says, if you're on your way to the altar, if you're getting ready to celebrate a service, if you're ready to enter into an encounter with God, whether it's Shabbat or a holiday or whatever it might be, or a daily basis, and you recall that someone has something against you, he says, literally, as the rabbis of old did, drop your sacrifice right there and go and get it sorted out with the other person, and then come back later and pick up your sacrifice and continue. Rosh Hashanah and these days of awe are an opportunity to focus on that and get that done. Now, this important instruction for repairing broken relationships recalls a very significant related rabbinic concept. It's called Tikkun Olam, the repair of the world. Tikkun Olam, the repair of the world. And as we think about it, our Olam certainly needs a lot of tikkuning. Thank you for sticking with me on that one. Somewhat disorienting pieces of data here. Last year, we reached a record high in the number of hate groups. It went well over 1,000. It was the fourth straight year of such growth, as we're informed by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Second piece of data, hate crimes increased by 30% over this time period, as the FBI tells us. I only discovered those two things I had known from before, but I discovered this just a couple of days ago. There were more than 2.6 million tweets, 2.6 million plus tweets with anti-Semitic content and images over the past couple of years. Anti-Defamation League, the Jewish Anti-Defamation League, keeps track of that for us, unfortunately. The past couple of years saw a peak in anti-Semitic incidents, in fact, as the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, pointed out. It was the highest in almost 40 years, and it was an increase of nearly 60%. This included vandalism and desecration of Jewish cemeteries just a couple years ago, and continuing on into these years. And then we all recall the tragedy of this past year, the synagogues in Pittsburgh and Poway, outside of San Diego, and the killings that took place there, the killing of the Jewish people while at worship. Now, the killers had posted messages as to why they were doing this. And these messages included the typical anti-Semitic slurs that we've heard down through the years. And the latter even included religious anti-Semitism or religious anti-Semitic accusations that he had based on his reading of the Bible and the theology he grew up with. So how do we even begin to repair and counter stuff like this? Well, a little over a year ago, Dr. Patrice started expressing concern over the religious roots of much anti-Semitism, of which these that I've shared with you are the most extreme example. And so as we've talked over the months, we've described it as often latent, inadvertent anti-Semitism. That there's stuff bubbling underneath the surface that allows this kind of stuff to surface. Anti-Semitism is and was far too frequently founded on misperceptions, and we coined this own, our own term, myth understandings. Some intentional, some not. Misperceptions and myth understandings regarding the Jewish people and Yeshua. It includes stuff like just what was Yeshua's attitude to Judaism? And what was the Jewish people's response to Yeshua? Including who? Just who was responsible for his death. It even includes stuff like attitudes to the Pharisees. Now, in order to repair this part of our world, we all must combat these ideas as we encounter them. We began this campaign several years ago, Dr. Patrice and I, with the book we wrote, The Distortion. And many parts of it are still very relevant. However, all of us need to be alert to and ready to correct these notions as we hear them or suspect them underlying conversations we become part of. Another less chilling but equally important task in repairing our world over this coming year or coming years has to do with a task directly connected to Yom Kippur. In fact, it comes from Isaiah chapter 58, verses 6 to 8. Isaiah strikingly says this, "Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen?" God is speaking. We fast, you know, on Yom Kippur. "Here's what I've chosen, the kind of fast I want from you. To loose the chains of injustice, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from others. It's then your light will break forth like the dawn and your healing will quickly appear." Notice that's very interesting, very striking. It took me till the third time I read that for that to really sink in. There's a healing associated with us going through this kind of, as he calls it, fast. "And then your righteousness will go before you." Remember, righteousness is the key to what we are seeking for during this high holiday period. Anyhow, "your righteousness will go forth before you. And then the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard." God will back us up. "Then you will call and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help and he will say, Hineni, here I am." And Yeshua forcefully reminds us of just this task in what's called the Olivet Discourse, because it took place on the Olivet mountain range. Levi's Gospel, Matthew chapter 25, Yeshua says this, beginning at verse 34, "Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world." Quick pause. What is part of our story? What was one of our three stories for Rosh Hashanah? Celebration of the creation of the world. Notice how appropriate this is. That's another thing I didn't notice until just yesterday. Sometimes it takes me a little longer for this stuff to seep in. Hopefully you learn a little more quickly. Anyhow, "For I was hungry," he says, "and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" And the king will reply, "I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these people, you did for me." There it is. He sets it before us, our challenge, as he's given it to us. Timely for Rosh Hashanah and for Yom Kippur, as the text indicate. Yes, this time period, Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur, is the Yamim Noraim, the days of awe. And beyond, these are days that are high time. They are the right time to be actively involved in repentance. We talked about this Friday night. In the turnaround of our lives with respect to God and with others. Anyhow, it's the right time to be actively involved in repentance and in repair. And that repair involves restoring ruptured personal relationships. It also involves remedying the often ugly realities around us, whether it's responding to anti-Semitism or reaching out to those less fortunate. So, as in just a few moments the shofar sounds, may it resonate in our ears. And as it does, let's use it to prod us. And let's use it to enable us to launch ourselves into an active season and year of genuine repentance and repair aimed at effective restoration and reclamation. Because after all, this is what he wants from us. Take just a second or so, or actually a minute or so, to reflect and to prepare yourself, because it will just be a few minutes till we're ready to hear the sound of the shofar.